true spouse of Jesus Christ. It is certain that St. Catherine visited the French settlement on the north side of the river, for the French historian Chelnick thus writes, "While passing some days at Montreal, where for the first time she saw the nuns, she was so charmed with their modesty and devotion that she informed herself most thoroughly with regard to the manner in which these holy sisters lived, and the virtues which they practiced." Her visit to Montreal had given her an imitation of something well known to the Christians of Europe, which had not been taught at the mission, a life of perpetual virginity and espousal to our Lord Jesus Christ. When she came home from Montreal, she started talking with her companions about imitating the nuns that she saw in order to make their souls more pleasing to God. As their imaginations grew more and more excited in picturing the ideal life that they would lead in their little community, shut off from everything that might distract them from prayer and holy thoughts, their eyes fell naturally enough upon the solitary, unfrequented isle which lay off the midst of the rapids. They started to plan an oratory with a cross under the trees. They also tried to make out a rule of life for themselves. But all at once they remembered Father Fremin, the head of the mission, and wondered what he would think of their project. St. Catherine had great respect for authority and a true spirit of obedience. They agreed to do nothing without the consent of their priest. One of them went at once to find him and asked him if he approved of their plan. He laughed heartily at all their beautiful projects and made light of them, saying that they were too young in the faith to think of such a thing as founding a convent. It was too much out of the ordinary way, not to mention the isle was too far from the village, and young men going back and forth from Montreal would be always at their cabin. Upon further consideration, they concluded that what the father said was reasonable, and they thought no more of their convent. As soon as St. Catherine learned from Father Fremin that God left every Christian free to marry or not marry, she lost no time in choosing a state of life for herself. Furthermore, if the fear that she had of appearing virtuous had not restrained her, she would have cut off all her hair as a sign of devotion. But she contented herself with dressing like those who were the most modest in the village. Father Fremin gave her some rules of life more special than those he gave to the others. He directed her to keep herself in retirement, especially during the summer when the canoes came down, not to go to the water's edge to see them arrive, like the rest, but to remain in her cabin. St. Catherine was not going to be deterred from the thought of giving herself completely to Jesus Christ, and she started insisting with Father Fremin to make a vow of virginity. Her spiritual friend and instructress, Anastasia, who had always until that time found so much docility in St. Catherine, was extremely surprised at the little deference she paid to her counsels which were towards marriage. She even bitterly reproached her and threatened to bring her complaints to the father. St. Catherine had anticipated her in this and still begged Father Fremin to let her take the vow of virginity. The priest praised her design but advised her to take 3 days to deliberate her decision, that she might better know the will of God, after which, if she persisted, he would grant her request and silence her friends who wished her to marry. The priest was aware of St. Catherine's virtue, her sincerity of heart, and love of Christ. Anastasia approached the priest to oppose the vow, but was corrected by the father, upon which she saw the error in her ways, repented of her fault, and even became joyous for the choice that St. Catherine was making and fortified her soul with encouragement. The priest no longer resisted her pleadings to be allowed to consecrate herself to God by a vow of perpetual virginity. This she did, with all due solemnity, on the Feast of the Blessed Virgin, the 25th of March, 1679. However others might look upon her act, this solemn engagement with God gave her a feeling of freedom. At last, she had an acknowledged right to live her own life completely and only for Jesus Christ. After making her vow before the priest, no relative of hers questioned or disturbed her. From that time she aspired continually to heaven, where she had fixed all her desires.